Place to be nation. Welcome to PTBN's NBA team podcast as we hit the final. Are you excited? Are you ready to hear the final countdown again?
No. I'm done and over it.
You did not like that song. You had to sit there and what'd you did? Like hold the phone or something? Did you hold it like a candle at a concert?
Like a candle in the wind.
Yeah, like the Scorpions music videos when they would all hold the Winds of Change and all that stuff.
It's at least we could. Everybody said they predicted it.
Oh, so you're just totally like no selling like that awesome rock. We do that for the beginning of every NBA Finals episode. We like to do the final countdown to start it off. And no Joe Bluth is going to be like coming out of trying to do a magic trick, unfortunately.
I mean, this year was a little bit different, and you could see cracks in the armors of both teams. But in the end, everybody said it would be Cavaliers and Warriors, and it's the Cavaliers and Warriors, and now everybody's disappointed, and nobody wants to see it, and everyone's like, I don't want to see that again.
Okay, so you're totally like no-selling the final countdown.
It is a final countdown, but there's okay. No excitement for it this year. What's the build-up? What's the, LeBron's been in it for 8 years. Well, yeah, he's now cemented himself as the top two players of all time. It's him and Jordan.
You're jumping into the big stuff. Let's kind of like do a little bit of retracting here.
Okay, fine. He's Andrew Riesch. I'm Adam Murray. Welcome to Place to Be Nations NBA.
Yeah, I think the 70 people that listen probably know that I am Andrew Riesch, and this is Adam Murray that is talking to me, and we are the NBA Team Podcast, and we are doing our NBA Finals preview with a little bit of lanyap at the end for you guys that we'll talk about a little later. But yep, this is the NBA Finals preview, and we are just going to go ahead and just kind of do the previous recording of the last couple of years. So as we sit back and eat our popcorn, Adam and I hope you enjoy our recording of the – no, we're not going to do that. But I will say this, from last year's, because of the fact that now, obviously, very different for Cleveland with the personnel because no Kyrie Irving, a lot of changes that were made at the trade deadline. Obviously, the Cavs are different, but at the end of the day, it's all about LeBron. It's all about the King. With the Warriors, it's basically the same team. You know, they did get pushed really, really hard in seven games by the Houston Rockets. Cleveland went through their own strife, but that was sort of expected. When it comes to the Warriors, that – You weren't absolutely sure, and then, the shit hit the fan for them, but they got out of it.
They did, and, it was injuries that took out took out the Warriors. The Cavs were taken out by just pure lack of talent, I would say. If, as we know, playoff rosters shrink, and you have Larry Nance as your main backup, and that's it, and Jeff Green's getting the majority of minutes, so there's just no, LeBron's going to score 40. He's doing amazing things at his age. 15th year, he's doing it. But nobody else is like, okay, you want to get a center for George Hill?
Well, what's funny is that they almost played George Hill in the Utah series last year, the Warriors I'm talking about, but I think he got injured. So he either barely played or he didn't play at all in that Utah series. Let's just hit up on that Boston series with Cleveland really quickly. We're going to talk about Boston at the end, so we're not going to try to like dive into too much of the minutia. But, it was a situation where the home team won every game until game seven, and then the Celtics, the Cavaliers, I can't say stole it, because that gives you the sense that the Celtics were the better team, the Cavs and LeBron just sort of like swindled it from under their nose. But it didn't – that definitely wasn't the case. It felt like it definitely felt like that LeBron just had another trick up his sleeve, and the Celtics just didn't have a plan B or a plan C.
Well, I'll just tie both together. In the end, both Houston and Boston couldn't hit a three to save their life. And
that was the tie that binded, yes.
And they just couldn't do it, and they both crept out in the fourth quarter at the end. And then the championship teams find ways to win. teams at the cusp, they find ways to lose. And again, nobody expected this from Boston, having their two top stars out, relying on, you know, rookie Jason Tatum in second year, Jaylen Brown, and, you know, unheralded Terry Rozier, and, you know, I mean, even Sammy Ogilvy and Abdul Nader were getting minutes.
Let me say this. You're more of the realistic type of Boston sports fan. You like to kind of keep an even keel, which is fine. But there had to be a couple of scenarios there when you were watching that series, especially at the Game 7 like that, where it's very low scoring. And when you have a low scoring game like that, possessions start to get really tight. They become more and more important because scoring comes at a premium. There had to be some moments there, especially with the three-point shooting and the fact that they just could not make one to save their lives in the second half, where you were just like – you wanted to like hit your fist on the fucking table and go like, how did they not pull that off? You know what I'm saying?
I said that, but I realize how young this team is, and then you look at next year, and you're like, you know what? They're going to be the favorites next year. Even if LeBron comes back to Cleveland, it's Boston's shot to lose next year.
Yeah, you got – well, if you have Hayward, if you have Kyrie Irving, in a perfect world, I guess you could call it, yes, Boston would be the – what? Boston would be your Vegas favorite or your Supreme Court favorite, depending on who you're taking the money from. But – the thing about Game 7 is also, you know, great LeBron, of course. It's Game 7. It's an elimination game. He's since 2008, I think the number is that since 2008, he's 6-0 in Game 7s, which is unbelievable. Which means when it's elimination time, that LeBron's going to take you out.
Yeah, you can't bet against him no matter what. And then...
well, you can't give him a chance. You can't give him a chance to take you out because he'll do it.
Exactly, and you know, nobody's afraid of J.R. Smith anymore. Kyle Korver, he just provides offense, no defense. We say the same thing all the time. Kevin Love is, I don't want to say he's regressed this year being a number two option, but he's not as good as previously advertised.
Offensively, he's as good as he always was, but defensively, he's a sieve.
Yeah.
And he relies so much on that off arm to draw fouls and to sort of get away with defending while fouling. It becomes a little bit of a problem. But also injuries are a big issue with Love too.
Yeah, he does get has the injury bug with him. But okay, with all that said and done, it's just, you know, this is old school Cavaliers of LeBron and miscellaneous. And then, well, this is LeBron's toughest opponent yet, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, the Warriors, the machine, we all knew they were. They got taken to seven games. They you know, they dropped a game in Utah. It's like, well, oh, wow, they're not that superior team. But it's just, how is this not going to be a sweep? How is every game not going to be decided by 15 to 20 points?
Well, here's the thing. The one trend that's been common with Golden State is that the first game at Oracle, they usually pop their opponent. They beat them by like 20-plus points. It happened in every single series so far. It usually happens in every series except for the Spurs one where Kawhi got injured. You know, they usually don't have close games to start the series. They usually kind of like put the hammer down. And then the lethargicness sort of kicks in the first quarter of the game after that where they sort of – they just kind of like – sit on their hands a little bit. But that, you know, in the finals last year, you got that sense a little bit in game two, but Durant in that entire series, the finals last year where he was finals MVP, he was so great in every game that it really didn't matter. It just, and to be honest with you, to bring it back around to game seven against Houston, which was played on Monday night, Memorial Day, it sort of felt that way in that game too. If Curry just lights it up, if Durant just makes those shots that he can make over guys like Eric Gordon on mismatches in the fourth quarter, they're going to out-talent Houston without Chris Paul. And that kind of came into fruition. I mean, out-talenting, it's complicated with Cleveland because out-talenting Cleveland is an option at other positions. But no matter what wing, no matter what forward, no matter what master game plan that your coach can throw on LeBron James, nobody's better than him. He's the best player every game they play.
Exactly. But here's just a quick question. Would Houston have won if they had Chris Paul?
I would say yes. But then again, there's that notion that Chris Paul has a tendency to choke in big games. So would they have been worse off by having Paul?
I don't think he could be worse off than missing 27 threes in a row.
Yeah, but would Paul's presence had created them being able to make more shots, you know? Trevor Ariza, I mean, the other two guys that we could sort of link together is Ariza and Terry Rozier. They had what you would call the nightmare game, where like the John Starks game, where like because John Starks had this horrifically bad shooting exhibition against Houston at the in the last two games of the 1994 NBA Finals, which he's always going to be maligned for. And I don't think Rozier and Trevor Ariza are going to be maligned like that because this wasn't the NBA Finals. It was Game 7 of the Conference Finals, but not a good look. Not a good look. I'm sure that Ariza will be able to get over it. Rozier's got a long career ahead of him, but man, those are tough to get over. When you go like 0 for 10 or 2 for 13, that's really, really tough to get over.
But that's what Marcus Smart does on a daily basis.
Well, Marcus Smart eventually admitted after the game seven that his thumb was killing him. Well, if your thumb was killing you, you shouldn't be taking shots. You know, hide them. Find a way to hide the weaknesses. And with Marcus Smart, he just didn't care. And that's fine, because if you have a guy like Brad Stevens that's going to enable your players to play at their best and be Mr. Intangibles, then yeah, Marcus Smart's your dude, but don't let him take three pointers. Please, for the love of God, don't let him take three pointers. You know?
You live by the hero ball, you die by the hero ball. But just going back to the finals now, okay, yes, Houston. Well, Houston basically they got D'Antonied. You know you can't play Chris Paul 40 minutes every game, and all of a sudden playoffs came. He's just riding him, playing every minute. Like, no, you need to give him a break. He can't play these minutes anymore. He's getting older. Nope, didn't listen, and then the wheels came off.
Here's the thing about the Rockets. The defensive game plan that they it's a little, I don't want to say it's similar to Oklahoma City in 2016. Even Ernie Johnson kind of name dropped that with Kevin Durant right next to him by the curtain, and like it kind of got that look like where Kevin Durant sort of gave the stink eye to Ernie Johnson, because it's like, you're bringing up a game where my team choked against the Warriors, not the most comfortable position. But I mean, we talked about that series, a couple years ago, obviously. But the thing about that Warriors Thunder series that went seven is that, number one, the Thunder were up 3-1, and number two, I think the Thunder were more talented than the Warriors. Would you agree?
Well, back then.
They were bigger and more athletic, was kind of the main crux of that whole situation.
Yeah, but in the end, they wilted away, and there's nothing you could do about that. But
With the
okay,
Rockets.
this year, how does this not go more than five games?
Okay, but let's go back to the Rockets situation with the defensive game plan and what Cleveland can be able to implement. The problem I have with Cleveland in that scenario is that Houston switched a lot because they had all those wing players. Cleveland has wings like Jeff Green and a couple other people that you can kind of move around, maybe even a Larry Nance Jr. if you need athleticism on the court. But I don't know if you can really do that. But the game plan that Houston had was solid. It was a solid defensive game plan. But the problem was, if you isolate Curry and Durant, they're eventually going to find the holes. They're going to get dribble handoffs, and they're going to just start sinking shots.
Well, the thing is, the Warriors are a team, so they have no problem passing the ball around. We saw at the Rockets, there was not much ball movement.
But the funny part is, Curry kind of got forced. This is where the series got really interesting, because Curry had to adjust to the way D'Antoni's team played. Because they had to do some more ISO in order to get more points, or to get premium on their points, because points were hard to come by because of the athleticism and the switchability of the Houston defense. So they had to get a little more creative. All that motion stuff, it came back in Game 7 when Paul was out, but in those games that Houston won, in games 4 and 5, you could tell that the switching defense and a lot of the other sort of things that they were throwing at the Warriors, up top, that was giving them a lot of trouble, and another big problem that the Warriors sort of fixed in game 7 was that in transition, the Warriors were not getting baskets in those games that they lost. They fixed that, where they were able to get turnovers and immediately turn them into points with threes and such. The other problem is also they missed 37 three-pointers. That'll do it to you too. Which one do you think was the most like befuddling? The 37 missed threes by Houston, or the, I think it was like maybe like 30 to 28 missed threes by Boston?
It was just, but you put them together, they just couldn't handle it down the stretch, and
But
you
which
can't
one was
say
the but which one was the worst?
you can't say one was worse, because Boston fans will say Boston, Houston fans will say Houston. They are both equally stinkers. Just equally both.
But when you miss 27 in a row or 28, that's really bad.
It's really bad, but you know, going, what are they, like, something like, what, 17, 20% from three? Like, it's just the thing. You shoot yourself in or you shoot yourself out, and they both shot themselves out. So now, can I ask my question?
Go ahead and ask your question.
How does this not go more than five games?
I don't think it will, unless there's an injury to the Warriors.
We know LeBron will score 40 every night.
Does Andre Iguodala play?
Does he need to?
I think he needs to guard LeBron. I mean, do you want Durant to have to get in foul trouble on him?
You're not going to put Draymond on him?
You can put Draymond, but Draymond has to be more of the help, especially if you have Tristan Thompson down there.
But if,
you know,
if
they're
going to
run
Kevin...
they're going to run that Capella stuff with that tight pick and roll with Thompson.
But Capella is better than Thompson, and if you have Kevin Love out for a game or two with a concussion.
Yeah, but you can run more of that big stuff. That's what it is. It's like, you know, the only other thing you could do is go with one of those shooting bigs. Now Channing Frye's gone, so you know you can't really do a lot with like a shooting big. They don't really have one of those, so you'd have to basically go small. That's not an option for Cleveland because Golden State's got so much size and versatility. You just can't give it up.
Yeah, they could go small, but you've seen Rodney Hood's not playing anymore, and.
Yeah, I mean, Jordan Clarkson you'll see sometimes playing on the wing, you know, if you have Korver out there along with George Hill. You know, Korver showed some defensive pop in the Boston series, along with being able to make threes when he's open, because that's Korver's specialty. And then Jeff Green sort of came alive, you know. The thing about Jeff Green is that he's always had athletic. We talked about this forever on the show. He's always had athleticism. He's been able to always hammer home a dunk every now and then, and he's got a pretty decent body for a wing, you know. So he's able to stay in front of people a little bit, but he's not like a go to guy. If he gives you a 19 points like he did in Game 7, it's a miracle, you know.
Yeah,
it's,
he'll give you 12 or 15. Excuse me.
you got a kid. Did LeBron spike your drink there?
You know, he'll give you 12 or 15, but it's not like needle moving. It's just like, eh. You know, he's there, and all of a sudden, it's not. His 15 is just like, I don't want to say garbage 15, but it's not like invigorating, or he'll rally the team. So he's like, oh, yeah, he scored a bucket. Eh.
Yeah, but well, it definitely wasn't garbage when he got in Game 7 when he was making threes and Boston couldn't make one to save their life. But J.R. Smith is also super clutch. That's kind of the name of his game. He does everything wrong until you need him to make a play, and he makes a play. he's one of those. He's the ultimate no yes player. And then you got Larry Nance Jr. I think – here's my problem. I think because of the fact that they need versatility and athleticism, Nance has to be out there at times. You know, but the problem is that he was so bad against Boston's defense, where they just kind of confused him, you know, where he was just making the wrong choice all the time. And you can't have that, where you don't know where you don't know who's switching. You don't know whether to fall back on, you know, if they try to do a screen. You've got to be completely dialed in defensively. And I thought Cleveland did a really good job of that down the stretch in the Boston series. I thought defensively they were pretty dialed in. And that's been the maligned part of the Cavaliers, is that their defense was like second to last in efficiency, and you know, down in the regular season, and they don't get blocks, and they don't get steals, and they don't rebound really well, but they still find a way, especially in Cleveland, to sort of pull one out and get a little more physical. Do you think the physicality thing, because a lot of people talk about how the Warriors got worn out by the Rockets, and maybe they'll be ripe for the Cavaliers to be able to sort of get physical with them and be able to take advantage. Do you buy into that theory?
No, because both teams went to Game 7. Both teams had to essentially pull it
out.
Yeah,
but Cavs-Celtics was more physical. I'll say that.
Yeah, so both teams aren't rested. Both teams are – it wasn't, you know, one team swept and all of a sudden sitting at home and, well, I hope they don't get rusty. No, both these teams, it's just – they're on equal footing as far as that goes, but Again, just one team is more powerful, and I don't know how much more we could say about this because it's
Well,
not going to be close.
I'm kind of interested to see what happens with Kevin Love when he comes in, whenever he comes in, because he's in the concussion protocol because he injured his head in game six and obviously a concussion. Did not play in game seven, but in turn, that sort of helped out the Cavaliers defensively with tightening their rotation and being able to do things. And given that Boston scored 79 points in that game, turned out to work out that way. Kevin Love offensively in last year's finals against the Warriors was very, very good, but defensively, he didn't really do much for him. That's to say the least. You kind of wonder what they'll be able to do there with Draymond Green. Maybe they want to sort of get Green out of the paint so that they can give LeBron a little bit more opening to do lobs and stuff like that with guys like Tristan Thompson. So you want Love out there at the same time. They don't normally do that. Tyronn Lue doesn't do that. It's usually Love or Thompson. But we'll see. I think the matchup portion of this series is really fascinating because we haven't seen this version of Cleveland against the Warriors. We've seen the Kyrie, Love, LeBron version against the Warriors 2 years in a row, and then we saw a LeBron version of that without either of them, which was 2015, where he just tried to carry them to six games and he still got eliminated.
And this
In
is the
this
same
one.
thing here. This is like when it was Iverson and crap in Philly, and it's like, well, you stole the game, but in the end, it was Shaq time, I believe.
Yeah, that was in the Shaq era. The thing is too, this is the fourth time in a row that they're playing against each other. Yes, I'm sure there's a lot of media fatigue or fan fatigue of, oh God, it's the Cavs and the Warriors again. This is so annoying. When is LeBron just going to give one up so that someone else can have a spot? Listen, I don't mind watching LeBron James play great basketball. I think it's fun. I think it's fun watching a guy
Oh,
like him.
watching LeBron is great. Watching everyone else in that team this year, knowing, again, just
Well,
give
here,
me one reason to be excited.
let me ask you this. In 2015, did you enjoy his finals performance? Did you enjoy him not being able to shoot the ball but be able to average a triple-double because almost every single possession by Cleveland revolved around him and being able to either find an assist or score and get to the free throw line? Because that's what was the majority of the Cleveland offense was, because they had no Kyrie, they had no Kevin Love, they had to rely on guys like Matthew Dellavedova and Timothy Mozgov. He was stuck, Or did you enjoy the version of Cleveland in 16 and 17 when their offense was really clicking? You had Kyrie Irving giving Curry problems, and you had Kevin Love being able to rebound, and then LeBron sort of just taking over late in games.
Yeah, you had two teams built for, to go against one another. Now it's just the Cleveland is just miscellaneous team in the East versus now super team in the West. So I just don't, I'm not excited.
I know.
That's
I
all.
understand. I understand that point of view, but it is impossibly hard for two teams, the same two teams, to play each other 4 years in a row in the NBA Finals. I'm not trying to put them on this super pedestal, like, oh, this is better than the Lakers and the Celtics. This is better than, what's another example of one? Like the Bulls and the Jazz played each other 2 years in a row, and I've always had like a personal favorite for that one, but. I've enjoyed the finals that they've had in the past 3 years. What I found fascinating about it is how different each of the teams have been, obviously for different reasons, because after 4 years, teams change. They play each other every year, but the personnel moves around.
That is a good segue, but yeah, teams change, but yeah, it's just rivalry. The rivalry of Steph and LeBron, just the big names. Yeah, those are the ones that are staying, but again, I don't know
I
how,
get you.
I just don't know how you're like, what about this matchup? It's not going to matter when they're down 15. I mean, yeah, game one could happen. They could shock them. It could be, oh, wow, it's a close game. It's going to be exciting, but I just don't see it happening, and nobody else does. Everyone's just like, eh, let's just get it over with.
And another big problem I have with that with the Cleveland personnel is if you put George Hill on Curry, who's going to guard Klay Thompson? I have a very that's going to probably have to be Korver, J.R. Smith. I have a huge problem with that. I don't know if that'll even work. If they have to force switches, which is what Houston was able to do successfully, I don't know if Cleveland can really do that unless LeBron just goes Superman and he just starts doing weak side blocks and making all the defensive, fixing up all the defensive holes and or plugging them up. And then being able to go out and transition, make the right play, and then find open threes. And I will say for Cleveland, 3-point shooting wise, still an elite team. I mean, that's just a team you just can't leave open.
No, you can't leave LeBron open, but at what point do you say you're afraid of what, Jordan Clarkson is going to do something, and again,
Yeah.
Larry Nance will do something, and,
It would have to
Seti
be something
Osman,
totally. It would be
Rodney
have to be
Hood.
kind of. It would have to be similar to Dellavedova because I keep going back to that 2015 series because I kind of feel the same way in terms of the personnel. Dellavedova was a complete shock. Like no one thought that he could give Curry some problems, but he did until they made a few adjustments and they started Iguodala so that they could put their death lineup out there. I'm sure the Warriors have a few tricks up their sleeve if they lose one, especially if they lose in Golden State. That would be a shocker. That would be one where Golden State would probably have to throw out. Their best lineup. The problem is, I really, because of his knee contusion and the fact that Steve Kerr said the progress was not as good as they thought it would be, I really do not think Iguodala will play in the series. I think that's significant in terms of the matchup with LeBron. I know they can switch. I know they got, a lot of athleticism they can throw at LeBron, but I just have a feeling that if they just guess wrong or if somebody gets into foul trouble like Draymond Green or Kevin Durant because of the fact that Iguodala's not out there or Sean Livingston. That could be a real problem for them. And I could see if they steal one in Golden State, then it gets kind of interesting. But I don't know if Cleveland can hold court at home against the Warriors. That's the other problem.
Exactly.
I mean,
I just.
it feels like a lot of end game. It feels like and like the Warriors had their scare against the now we said this in 2016. Oh, they had their scare against the Thunder. They got away with it, and now they're going to win the title, and they didn't. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's a repeat of that situation, but you
It
just got
would be a shocker if it did, but I don't see it coming.
I mean, you just got to keep it in the back of your mind, but it's a faint possibility. I mean, the most likely thing, and I'm just going to lay it out, I'd say Warriors in five. I think it'll be very similar to what
Yeah,
happened.
they'll steal a game 3 maybe or game 4. And it's just again Warriors 4 or 5. Nothing will be close.
I'll give you the exact sequence, in my opinion. I think the Warriors will pop them in the first two games of Golden State. I think Cleveland will win game three, and then the Warriors will squeak out game four, and then in a very close game five, the Warriors will win it. I think that's the sequence.
I don't see a difference. I don't see any problem with that. Other
I
than
don't. I don't see 3-0. I don't see that happen last year. I don't see that happening.
it's just again, not very exciting. So
Yes.
can we now move on?
You are so done. It's just sad that you're like so done with the NBA finals because the conference finals was like legitimately exciting.
And
I
that's
know
what
some.
everybody said. Everybody said that was going to be the fun one, because it's going to be the Warriors and Cavs. Nobody wants to see it. Oh well, it'll be Houston and Celtics. No, nobody wants to see them. So everybody got the joy out, and now it's just a deflated end of the season.
I know a lot of people will hedge like the Vegas bets of, oh, well, the Warriors were still the favorites when they were down 3-2 to the Rockets. I will say this. There was a legitimate time frame between, I want to say game four and game seven in both series where I legitimately did not know who was going to win the series. And that makes fun theater. That's what makes the NBA fun. A lot of people can poo-poo on the results. Oh, this game wasn't as good as I thought it would be. I thought it would be epic, and it kind of sort of shit itself. And a lot of people were very disappointed with the fact that Paul couldn't play after the hamstring injury in game five. But them's the breaks. That's how it goes. With the Celtics, I just felt like they could. I felt like they just left a lot on the table. I mean, they played as hard as they could for the majority, but in that game seven, man, it just felt like a lot was missing.
It's a young team. I don't know what you expect from them.
So what it is we could try to sort of add on with the with some of these other teams that got eliminated. So, I mean, we could talk about some of the cap space and the roster, but we could sort of scan really quickly with these. You know, we did gone fishing for a lot of these. This time it's the Celtics and the Rockets that are be gone. So let's just sort of hit them up pretty quickly. With the Boston Celtics, it was sort of a take because you had a completely different playoff team versus the one that you saw in the regular season with Kyrie Irving sort of taking the lead after the Gordon Hayward injury. But the whole design of it was to have Hayward and Irving and Horford be the guys. So it was sort of you were almost forced to sort of fit into this niche.
Yes, first let me just take a quick step back and say welcome to part five of the Gone Fishing previews.
Yeah, oh, like a spillover version.
This is out of order, obviously, because we've tagged this onto the championship. I don't have any fancy edits in there
Yeah.
or little clips,
Yeah,
nor my little recorded
you're
intro.
not going to have one of Terry Rozier just wheeling around to take a three.
I don't have any of that. This is
I'm
just
not
an.
trying to poo-poo Terry Rozier. He's a really good player, but that was bad.
I just wanted to say this was just part five that we've added out of order because we have four parts done. It's just for some reason they haven't made them online yet.
Yeah, they're all going to be there in time. I mean, it's just a slow pro. It's a slow, steady process. But we're
I don't understand it. Four ready to go. But for some reason, I guess we need to just trickle them out. But anyhow, Celtics, what they need to do. The big question is Marcus Smart. Is a team going to overpay him where they can't match it? I really can't honestly gauge his value because he has all the intangibles. It's just he can't shoot for shit. So and he also too has an injury bug. Other than that, we've already said that this team is just penciled in for the finals next year. You're getting Hayward back. Tatum, not. The silver lining of Hayward going down is you never knew this Tatum could become this player,
he was probably
and
the
all of a
best
sudden now,
player. He was probably the Celtics' best player in the conference final.
and then Al Horford is just a slow, steady. Yeah, he's the new center. He's the new, he'll pick and pop and shoot threes, but he's not going to score 20 and 20 and 12.
Horford's contract is timed out exactly right. By the end of the 2019-2020 season, he'll be done for. You know, but
He'll
it,
be
but
done.
it,
That's Jalen Brown's money.
Yeah, and I mean that's sort of how it's timed out, like I said. But for Irving, you know, he had the knee surgery that took him out. The funny part is he had like a nasal surgery, so he wasn't even in the building for game seven. Was that kind of strange?
It was kind of strange, but it was also strange that he had to have knee surgery at such a random point. Oh, yeah, playoffs are coming. I'm going to get my knee scoped like a couple weeks before. It'll be
Well, it
cool.
was a tension wire from a previous injury from the 2015 finals when he was in
Yeah,
the
and
Kings.
it was just strange, and it was like, okay, maybe the Celtics are phoning it in, but it's just, but we said Brad Stevens is a wizard. I don't get
Yeah.
it. He comes up with these plays, and who knows? But the Celtics, all they need to do is you need a shooter and they need a rebounder.
Yeah, well, offensively, you know, they were a good 3-point shooting team, but you know, the thing is, like, I wouldn't say a mid-range shooter. I mean, that those are hard to come by because they don't exist anymore. But like, unless you got like an elite shooter like a Kevin Durant or a LeBron James, but what it is like they need to find somebody whose just main focus is on the offensive end. You know, defensive integrity is something that Stevens obviously values because they were such a good defensive team all year long. But there has got to be a point where it's like I'm not trying to say like you know because I'm thinking of the Warriors and he pops up, but I'm not saying he's a great fit. But a guy like Nick Young. It's okay to have guys like that sometimes. You know, Will Barton, you know, you just have to find guys
Oh,
that
Nick
can
Young, just
score.
a J. Get your own J.R. Smith, just a spot-up shooter.
Yeah.
Not going to provide anything much else, but that's what they need. They sorely lack that, especially as the injuries came. And well, now you're left with your wings being Tatum and Brown, and well, they're not the best of
And
three-point
listen,
shooters.
next year there will be that awkwardness where you have Hayward and Irving and Tatum and Brown and Horford, and maybe they get into a slump, and it's like, oh, why is it all going wrong? Like that, you know, we saw this with Durant in Golden State the first couple of months. It was not super cozy at first. You know,
Well, it's going to be what happens when Tatum hits the sophomore bump, and then you have to put Marcus Morris back in the starting lineup.
yeah, but the days of Aaron Baines and Shane Larkin, I would predict, are over. You hit the one about Marcus Smart. What happens here is this: he's a restricted free agent, so offer sheets would have to come, and then Boston can match it. The problem is this: you got Terry Rozier, who's going to be a restricted free agent in 2019. So, do you want to do you want to go through the potential of having to like play out the whole season thinking that Terry Rozier might be an RFA just like Marcus Smart did, or do you want to tie him up in October? Well, obviously you got to get through the Marcus Smart issue. My deal is this, because they're going to be pretty close to the tax no matter what. If that offer sheet from another team, if it inches around, I want to say like 17 to 18 million, you can't match it. That's one where you're just going to have to just let him go.
And they, yeah, and you let him go, you lose all the intangibles. But, you know, like we said, they seem to – they found Shane Larkin and Daniel Tice out of in Europe out of nowhere. Baines, he could come back on a cheap deal. He's not going to command tons of money in the open market. So, you know, Monroe is gone.
Yeah. I think Greg Monroe is done, yes.
Future is looking up, so.
But I don't want you to gloss over that thing about the intangibles. Here's the problem with that. They said the same thing about Lance Stephenson, and he got money from Charlotte. And that turned out to be a terrible deal. At what point is intangibles just overrated, is what I'm trying to say.
Look at Tony Allen. Okay. You know, the just – he couldn't shoot anything, but he's just a defensive – you earn your paycheck just being a lockdown defender, which Marcus Smart is.
Yeah, but that market was – it exactly matched what Tony Allen's production was, which was very good defense and being able to be a team player and a starter. The thing is with Marcus Smart, I sort of question that sometimes. But I can see in this marketplace the way it is, especially with teams being dumb GMs, just being able to hash out shitty deals, that I can see him getting overpaid. And if that troll deal comes in, then he's gone. Like, that's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, all right, we'll move on to Cleveland. The thing is here, a lot of stuff is tied up until 2020. Guys like J.R. Smith, Kyle Korver, Tristan Thompson. Oh. And it all comes down to LeBron with this player option. And
okay, we'll sum it up. Cleveland, this is a quick, I think a 3-minute, I've gone fishing for them. It depends upon LeBron. If LeBron leaves, this team's a lottery team because they're still in the tax with all their people.
But you still got that number 8 pick, so you got a little bit of room to move on.
Yeah, if you have that number 8 pick, but you're not going to be good next year with Kevin Love and garbage. It'll be like how he was in Minnesota. You think, you know, Rodney Hood and Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance again will be the guys who will,
okay,
who will pick that team in playoffs?
I'm not trying – now listen, LeBron James is indispensable. I completely 100% agree with that. I will also say this, though. If LeBron James does depart, you just got $35 million in cap space. So
No, you don't have $35 million because they're so far over the tax, they're just going to get under the tax line. They're not going to be under the cap. You still have Kevin Love getting a max deal. You gave Tristan Thompson a ton of money.
The amount of money that he would demand disappears, and you're able to at least do something. You know, I don't.
No, not really.
But I don't see
Jordan Clarkson has a $60 million deal.
Well, the big problem is George Hill's deal. That's the one that would be a problem because you can't trade that one.
Hill has.
But what I'm trying to tell you, Adams, I don't see a fire sale. I don't see when it's like, okay, let's try to trade Kevin Love. Let's try to trade Tristan Thompson. Like, the party's over. Like, I don't see that happening. You know,
well, they can't blow it up. I'm just saying they're not going to be good without him.
I disagree and with we that. Can't I really... disagree with that. I think they could be good. I think they could be good. You know, but that's like neither here nor there. That's like very nitpicky type of stuff. Like, I think they could be like a 7-seed Eastern Conference playoff team kind of thing.
If that's your high watermark for them,
that's what I'm saying.
That's not a good sign.
That's just my small nitpicky thing. LeBron James, obviously, if he departs, horrible. Horrible, devastating thing. The one thing that's weird about Cleveland this time is that I think they're actually kind of I wouldn't say see it coming. That's hard. That's a little too cynical. But in the back of their – it's not in the back of their mind. It's not in the back of their mind. It's in the front of their mind. They're like, this could happen, you know. But then again, what about this? Let me just give you one out there, okay? What if LeBron James just say, okay, I'll re-sign with Cleveland and I'll take $20 million a year? And let's use and that'll relieve our tax stuff. We can use the full mid-level exception, and we can try to find some more. Try to find another.
Like my friends.
Yeah, I mean it's
fine. Old people.
You know, I'm not saying that's going to happen. You know, the narrative out there lately with LeBron is that inside is that he wants max money no matter what. He's not taking discounts. But if he did decide to take a discount again in Cleveland, because he has another trick up his sleeve in free agency, he knows he can get this guy over here, then it can kind of get kind of interesting. But I will say this, LeBron has a few options. He doesn't have nearly as many options as he did in 2010 and 2014. Absolutely not. Like, the options are very narrow. You got like
No,
maybe.
he only has a handful of teams, but that's why I said we can't really discuss them because their entire team just hinges on one player.
Ronnie.
If LeBron's in, they're good. If he opts out, then they're not going to be good. That's all I
Let's
can
hit the
say.
small potatoes transaction wise for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Ronnie Hood. Does he sign the tender or does he get an offer sheet?
He'll sign the tender, and they might lowball him on like a 2-year deal, but.
You don't think a dumb team like a Chicago Bulls team is gonna like offer him maybe like $11 million a year on an offer sheet?
I don't know because the Chicago Bulls are in rebuild mode and like Atlanta's in a rebuild. They're not going to need a cornerstone. They're not going to need a potential cornerstone. Like, well, let's give you a ton of money to waste your good
Will
years.
J.R. Smith get traded?
I don't know what value he
He's
has.
had the issues with Tyronn Lue and the general manager, and there's got to be a point where, especially if LeBron departs, it's like, I'm done with this motherfucker. Time to ship him out.
I think his salary is partially guaranteed 2 years from now, so they have some relief with him.
Outside of that, they're basically locked in. You talked about the tax issue, especially the fact that they're probably going to be in repeater tax. So when I talked about
Yeah.
mid-level, they're actually going to have to go with mini mid-level, which is half of that, right around $4.5 million to use. But they are so clocked over. Like, there's just not much they can really do. Let's just move on to the West.
Let's go to the Warriors. Exact same story.
Well,
We
the thing
mention
that's
this every
interesting about the
year.
Warriors is that they've built that team where at the top they're all kind of locked in, especially with Curry's new deal. But the thing is, at the bottom, it's a house of cards. Like, all those guys are UFAs, unrestricted free agents. Like West, Nick Young, Zaza, Patrick McCaw's a restricted free agent. They didn't even put the option on Kevon Looney, so Kevon Looney might just walk. And then you got a non-guarantee on Quinn Cook that they're likely to pick up. All those guys down low, they're obviously not the guys that are building the team. It's guys like Iguodala and Draymond Green and Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry. I get that. But, at that bottom part, you're just sort of fishing for good deals. So how many of these guys will be back is the question.
They're all going to be back. They're all going to be back until the owner stops paying. As long as the starting five comes back or starting four, who cares? We've mentioned previously they're going to have what a $200 million bill in like 2 years or something. So as long as you want to buy titles, that's your team. Okay, you could spend $3 million and buy a second round pick here and there. You can get the veteran free agent who's chasing the ring, but for the most part, again, you have Durant, who's not going to take a discount again.
That's what
You're
I
just
was
going to be
about to
there.
say. The finer details in this situation with Durant and his player option and his opt-out that he's obviously going to do, that's the stuff that makes the difference between squeezing out a deal for a Nick Young and an Omri Caspi for the mid-level, which did not work out for them, or getting none of them and having to like fish for a crappy veteran on minimum deal. Because if Kevin Durant opts out and he doesn't want to take $26 million, he wants what Curry got. He wants 35. Well, guess what? You just gave away the $9 to $8 million of cap, not cap room, but money that you could have used to try to add in another decent asset, and that's gone. Do you think that Durant's willing to just say, play hardball with them and say, no, I want that max. I want that super max.
Yeah, and again, why wouldn't you give him the max if he wants it? Because
Oh, they're going to give him whatever he
he,
wants.
yeah, he's gonna. So again, you could find G League players and second round people and just hope everybody stays healthy. And again, just like I said, just if I had the $1 million man theme, I'd play it right now because that's all it is. If you're willing to pay for it, you've bought yourself your championship team.
Jordan
The end of
Bell,
story.
Jordan Bell, they're going to have for at least another year. They really like him, obviously, as you could see how much they played him in the conference finals. Sean Livingston's there till 2020. The one I find interesting, even though I don't think they'll trade him this offseason because he's just so beloved on that team and he is still valuable for what he can provide, is Andre Iguodala. Because my personal feeling is that by the end of 2019, you're staring down like $17 million a year or $16 million a year, and you're going to be so far into the tax. And then you got Klay Thompson's ex like there are rumors there that he is talking extension. The problem with that is if you talk extension with him and you got Draymond Green's deal coming up in 2020 and you've locked in Durant and Curry, you're going to be in the repeater tax for multiple years. And now you're looking at a tax bill that's getting up to like $200 million. And I don't know if even Joe Lacob would be willing to do that.
And you just go as far as he'll go
But that's
with.
what I'm trying to say is, are they willing to do that with Klay Thompson? Like, are they willing to talk extension if it's friendly?
Yeah, they'll make sense. I mean, they can't trade him. Every contract is tradable these days, so why wouldn't you lock him in if when you're willing to pay the money, and then when you stop paying the money, you can get rid of him?
But what if his agent
There's,
gets
there's.
it, but what if his agent gets in his ear when those extension talks come in and says, "You know, I know five teams that'll give you $27 million straight up a year." And he balks. Now you're looking at trouble in paradise.
Yeah, but at this point, you still have them next year.
Oh yeah, they'll be the bee's knees again. What I find interesting is, like I said, that house of cards in the bottom with the unrestricted free agents that they sort of gathered up and re-signed again, and all they added was Young and Caspi. That I find interesting because I think Patrick McCaw might get overpaid, you know. And
Oh, he's not going to be back.
oh yeah, and I think Kevon Looney's gone, you know. And that's their and
He's
that's
not going to be
and I'm
back,
gonna tell
too.
you this, that's their own fault. They could have made that work financially, especially with Durant taking the discount, where they could have tried to seal him up with picking up his option. They didn't do it. So that's their own fault.
Well, they didn't pick his option because he wasn't good.
He wasn't playing
So
well,
they figured we.
but he played well. He played better in the Houston series.
He played better, but that's not. You can't. You could buy a pick in the, a second round pick for $3 million. Straight cash, who could provide just as much. So they developed him, and they probably said we don't see much, much progress
I
here.
think the one
So
thing they need to do, and they still have that draft pick at number 28. I think they need a very good true center, like in the draft. Like, I don't know if they could find one in free agency. I know they got JaVale McGee, but it turned out Jordan Bell was more of kind of like one of those switchable forward types who can block shots and dunk. They need a good backup center. I think that's what they need in the draft.
yeah, and they could take time to get developmental. So, again, to the victor goes the spoils.
And to the loser goes the Rockets. And the Rockets, this one's a little bit of a house of cards too, because when you look at their free agency, oh my goodness, like you got Nene on that very small potatoes deal, which was like where you had to sort of reconfigure the contract because he was going to be at age 36 during the deal. You made a good one on PJ Tucker. He does get paid about $8 million a year, but he played really well and he fits well for them. The killer is the Ryan Anderson deal. And we saw Rhino, he barely played in that Golden State series, and when he did, he just did not fit at all what their defensive game plan was. Now, we warned everybody about this deal. We said, listen, no matter how well he plays the first year of that deal shooting threes for the Rockets, it is going to be a horrifyingly bad deal by the time you get to 2020. You know, and that looks like what it's going to be. The question is, will that cost him Clint Capella? Because Clint Capella is a restricted free agent, and there's a lot of scuttlebutt there that he might get an offer sheet that goes up towards to about $25 million, kind of like Otto Porter did.
Yeah, and Houston holds all the cards because they could just match him, but if they match Capella, they
You're
can't
so far
really
into the
pick up.
tax, yeah. You
You can't pick up Chris Paul, and well, you have Chris Paul and all
you
the
can you can pick up you can re-sign Chris Paul, but the problem is
and
there.
Capella.
Yes, you can. The problem is Ariza, you got no room for him. Gerald Green, you got no room for him. You're gonna have to just be kind of like Golden State with after their top five guys. You're just gonna be fishing for deals. That's the problem. You're gonna become worse automatically, you know. And you can't stretch
So,
Rhino at this point. You just can't do it.
nope, you can't do it yet. But just so many potential. Like they went all in this year, and they can chase it again next year. But
And
I don't know about that.
let's say this, they were openly admitting that they designed this team to beat the Warriors in 2018. That was what it was designed to do. They almost did it, but they failed. Now, do you think
They
that
almost did it. Injuries came up, and now. Okay, well, let's see what, Chris Paul's another year older if they resign him,
But I hate
so.
to see a team suffer consequences for trying to load up maybe in a year where the timing wasn't right because of a bad deal that you made the year before or free agency for this player the year after. It just sucks that the timing of your team can kind of come back to get you, you know. But that's just the way that free agency works. The thing is, like, I respected the fact that the Rockets went for it, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh yeah, you get points for actually trying in the era of, and let's just phone it in. Let's just start
We
tanking.
literally, the Spurs literally took a year off, if you ask me.
Oh, the Spurs took a year
Kawhi
off.
Leonard took a year
Oklahoma
off.
City tried and failed, and so Houston was like, "We got nothing." And I was like, "Well, this isn't the year to do it. This is Golden State's year again." No, we're gonna go all in. We're gonna try it, and they took them to the end. So, again, just a lot of question marks with Houston.
What's funny though is that even when they had Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon, they still had cap space to work with. Remember, when they got Chris Paul, they had to take small time contracts just to get over the cap so that they could enable the mid-level exception to get PJ Tucker. So they were in kind of a decent position in terms of salary cap space, even with Harden and Gordon and Ryan Anderson. Now it just shows how quickly a year can change it. Now you're just staring down a tax bill. But the thing is, I think that the new ownership for the Rockets are willing to do it for at least another year. The problem with Chris Paul, though, is that I don't think he's looking for like a 1 year deal at his age. I think he's looking for max.
He's looking for as much money as he can. This is the last big deal to
They
cash in,
literally
so.
designed the over 37 rules so that guys like Chris Paul and LeBron James can get a 4 year super max, and then go into age 36 or 37 and not have to go through the designated, it's called the designated player exemption when you get that big deal. But what I'm saying is that when you reach a certain age, it's actually set in stone that you cannot make so much money. But they extended that in the collective bargaining agreement, which, by the way, Chris Paul and LeBron James are like big timers in. They extended that to age 37, which is right around the point that both of those players will be at the end of their max deals.
Yep, how
Kind of
convenient.
smart. But yeah, it's but that, you know, I it, the biggest question is Paul, but boy, that Clint Capella thing is really interesting because I wonder if a team, how much a team is.
There's going to be a team like Dallas or Phoenix who is going to be like, we're just going to give you a ton of money. It's now Houston. You have 3 days to decide. What are you going to do? It's not cut and dry. It's going to be like you said with Otto Porter. You're going to go to the last minute of. Well, do we do it?
The one thing
Do we
there's
not?
two
We
there's two
have to,
things with
but.
the Rockets I would say that they do need. I think they need a good youthful player. Now they only have the number 46 pick in the draft. I think they need a good young player, that can sort of give them a little bit of vibrancy. And they need, and I know this sounds crazy because it's Harden, Paul, and Gordon, but they need a backup point guard. I don't not like a good traditional backup point guard, because that's the one thing that the Paul injury exposes, that they had to slip in Gordon as sort of like that other point guard, and even though he was effective, that's not what he does. So that's the one thing I would say. You need another backup point guard, and you need some younger players.
And they can, again, in this day and age, you could buy second round picks for nothing. Philly has like 50 still. They don't have enough roster spots anymore. So you could get something.
Luke Mbamute fit well in the regular season, but he didn't really show well in the Golden State series because they felt like the matchup wasn't good and he wasn't really generating any offense. Do you think he'll be back?
Probably not.
I mean, it's just it's it, he fit nicely in that, like, it was almost like more the philosophy of having those a lot of wings. And
It's just all veteran minimum deals.
yeah.
If you're going to come back in the veteran minimum, yeah, we're glad to have you. Oh, you want more than that? Well, we can't afford to. You're not part of the core four or five. You're just filling the roster. We need minimum only.
Yeah, I mean, and it would suck to say, okay, then we're just going to abandon this thing where we switch defenses because we tried it for 1 year and it failed. I don't think they're going to abandon it. I mean, I think they might tinker with it a little bit, where they might just have to go with guys that are. I know this sounds sacrilege because of the way the Rockets play. Maybe they need some mid-range guys. Maybe they need some guys who can actually like pull up from two instead of just launching out a bunch of threes that don't fall in.
I don't know, but interesting questions for both Houston and Cleveland.
And I think that's gonna probably do it. Like when it comes to the off season, it's really, really interesting, and I really enjoy that conference finals. I do understand like the frustration with the NBA finals, especially when you're going to the fourth one and you feel like this is like the most derivative version of Cleveland, whereas the Golden State Warriors are kind of stronger than ever. But I do see a few holes there where you could see some interesting things in the finals.
All right, you hold on to that hope.
On behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Enjoy the finals, guys.